So all in all, I think there is a strong urgency for investors to act both at the kind of larger, you know, I would say multilateral level to direct climate finance towards countries like India, and at the local level as well to sort of specific companies and startups and initiatives like Entice that are pushing this conversation forward.
It not just helps the utilities or DISCOMs, but also to the end users, because at the end, when you know the renewable energy is more useful, so it is going to lower the bills of the end users.
For the end user, it would mean more options, more reliable energy, more affordable energy. So we are at this inflection point where tools like this would really help us take the next leap forward.
That realization now prepares us to move from pilot kind of deployments to a system scale rollouts with partners and GIAP in alliance countries.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and of course, philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of life and work. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial, professional, and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. For this episode, I'm delighted to introduce our listeners to the winners of the Energy Transitions Innovation Challenge, or Entice 2.0. Early on this series, we introduced you to the people at the forefront of Entice 2.0 program, powered by the Global Energy Alliance for People and Planet, or GIAP. Today, we bring you face to face with the innovators who are driving India's climate solutions. They're the key change makers whose breakthrough solutions are ushering in a revolution in India's energy grid. To learn more about the solutions and the role Entice played in bringing their ideas to life, we will speak to Jharna Shah, co-founder Enlog, Parag Patil, Chief of Strategic Alliances, Factlon Labs, Arshir Chadda, co-founder and CEO, Trilectric, Ankur Sharma, co-founder and CEO, Flock Energy. We're also joined by Entice 2.0 jury member, Priya Shah, founder and general partner, Atheya Ventures. Priya has spent 17 years working across the finance, policy, and venture sectors in the US, UK, and Indian markets. She's an early investor in India's climate tech venture ecosystem and a director on Sustainability Mafia, one of India's largest climate founder coalitions. She's actively involved as a mentor, advisor, and thought leader with several think tanks, university labs, accelerator programs, and foundations on climate tech innovation, a board member on the University of Cambridge's Alumni Advisory Council, and an advisor to Brown University's Young India Leadership Council and Women's Launchpad program. I extend a very warm welcome to all our guests on the show today. Priya, let me address my first question to you, and then I'll draw in all our enterprising winners to share their story. You know, Priya, the gaps in climate finance have been outlined previously, and in previous episodes too, we have had extensive conversations around this. Suffice to say, a considerable financing gap remains as countries take stock of the climate commitments ahead of COP30. And, you know, this is also particularly true of a country like India, because we have to balance our economic needs. We are the world's fastest growing major economy and will continue to grow at a certain rapid pace. At the same time, we have to also strike a balance on the ecological front. This is particularly true because we are going through a slightly disruptive period in world history. In an increasingly volatile world, how do you see the role of investors evolving in the fight against climate change? Priya?
Thank you very much, Gaurav sir, and it's a pleasure to be here on this podcast. So thank you so much to the team for inviting us here. To answer your specific question, Gaurav sir, so, you know, obviously the world is seeing some unprecedented, volatility when it comes to directing climate finance to the nations or the markets where it is most needed. So, you know, countries like India, which is basically, you know, the fastest growing key emerging economy in the global south, India faces such large energy challenges, right? The growing demographic, rising carbon emissions from industrial activity, that is also having an effect on floods, on health implications of local air pollution, as well as on, you know, the sort of climate sensitive sectors like agriculture and fisheries and forestry, of which almost three-fourths of India's population actually depend on these sectors for their survival. So India is, in a sense, you know, highly vulnerable to climate change. And, you know, we need, a significant amount of capital as a nation to essentially invest across various areas within climate tech. And, you know, that includes sort of, I would say, energy generation, mobility, carbon removal, agriculture and biotech, circular economy, and, you know, industrial decarbonization. And, so far we've had a lot of good, I would say, activity from the early stage investors and some growth stage investors. And we've had a great, commitment and push from the Indian government on essentially, commitment towards the green growth agenda, investing across various different value chains and ensuring that large corporations actually take this sort of energy transition piece, transitioning away from petroleum and fossil fuels, that they take that very seriously. But obviously the challenge remains is that we need, as a nation, we need close to about $108 billion a year until 2030 across all the different asset classes, whether it's venture capital or private equity or debt, philanthropy, large scale project finance, to really help us shift towards net zero in the coming decades. And so I think one aspect of this is really to develop really strong relationships with other countries, you know, whether it's the G7 countries or the larger countries in the global north, to ensure that there is that countries like India and the other countries in the emerging markets remain a priority when it comes to directing climate finance towards India. And that's at the large scale, I would say, multilateral level, which are conversations that are ongoing, you know, along with obviously the US and Europe. I think Japan is a great partner of India in especially, project finance and infrastructure finance towards the green energy sector. That's one. But the second is on a more local level, when you think about, you know, investors and what kind of role they play in the early stage ecosystem. I think investors like us really help take the risk on technologies that are highly disruptive, and beneficial to industry, whether it's, you know, in green steel or battery chemistry or in sort of grid optimization, like the companies that we have here on the podcast today, and really, making sure that that the capital goes to these companies where, you know, previously it might have been, these companies may have been overlooked. And we basically, this is in a highly sort of, emerging sector, a lot of return potential as well in this sector. And of course, large scale impact that can be generated, environmental impact from being able to invest and have a position in these companies. So all in all, I think there is a strong urgency for investors to act both at the kind of larger, multilateral level to direct climate finance towards countries like India, and at the local level as well to sort of specific companies and startups and initiatives like Entice that are pushing this conversation forward.
Absolutely, Priya. You know, let's talk a little bit about the winners that we have here today of Entice 2.0. And Priya, I'm sure arriving at four winners out of many worthy pitches, it may have been extremely competitive. At the same time, it would have been also a very challenging task. Would you walk us through very briefly through your considerations? How did you arrive at these winners, going ahead and selecting these winners, and the thought process in selecting the winners? Why did these specific solutions stand out compared to others?
Yes, of course. I'm happy to share more light on that. Thank you, Gaurav, sir, for the question. So I think, I was obviously, part of a much larger jury of at least 10 other very highly distinguished individuals, both investors and sort of policymakers and other experts in their own right. And I think we collectively made the decision based on a few different criteria. So I think for us, what was really important was one, the technology. So how really differentiated are these solutions? What is the kind of intellectual patents basically the way in this in which these solutions are essentially carved out to basically suit the grid, whether it's the DISCOM or utility, or whether it's corporate customers or residential customers, how effectively can they actually adopt it, and how is it different from the rest? That was one big consideration. The second was also on the scalability and ability to kind of optimize a grid. We've invested through our fund into various different solutions across some demand response, energy management, smart grid, virtual energy storage. And a lot of it depends on the timing of, whether these solutions will actually transform the grid if basically the state utilities, et cetera, have already looked at becoming more open to new interventions coming in. And also how effective is a company able to execute, and how that comes out down to the founding team as well, to be able to kind of secure some of these contracts and demonstrate that they already have LOIs and prototypes out there. So that is leading on to the third sort of consideration, is what traction does the company already have so far? And we tended to choose or rather be more favor towards some companies that essentially had demonstrated very strong traction, that had could show sort of demonstrable logos on their website of clients that they had been able to lock in, and that they would this would basically be able to be scaled and replicated fairly organically, and that was a sort of the hallmark of a solution that was going to be long-term, sustainable, and cost efficient.
Absolutely, Priya. My next question out of the four winners, very briefly, you can add your own individual perspectives and insights to it. Essentially, it's about the problem statements of this year's NTIES edition, accrued to what is called the DUET acronym, the Digitalization of Utilities for Energy Transition Initiative, by GAAP. There has been a sharp uptick in RE deployment in the country, and India has achieved the goals much ahead of time. And that's also true of the world, because there is a rapid deployment of RE. My question is, how important is digitalization of the grid? How does it assist a country at large? And are there any benefits for end users, particularly consumers like us? Jarna, if we may start with you, please. Jarna.
First of all, I would like to say I'm very excited and happy to be part of this conversation with all my fellow change makers in the energy segment. Digitalization of this energy grid is extremely important. It isn't, a futuristic sci-fi tech. It is very foundational backbone of how we want to, change the future of energy. To put it very simply, it is, as you mentioned, the adoption of renewable is increased. In the recent time, we have seen a faster adoption. So for that, to absorb all those energies which is generated through renewable sources, our grid has to be responsive. It has to be based on data. It has to be intelligent, and it has to take the actions automatically rather than, relying on the older traditional systems. So this makes the importance of digitalization, and it not just helps the utilities or DISCOMs, but also to the end users, because at the end, when the renewable energy is more useful, so it is going to lower the bills of the end users.
Absolutely. Ankur, how do you think digitalization is assisting the country at large, and what's your insight and views on this?
Thank you, Gaurav. Really appreciate the opportunity to have my inputs here. On the lines of what Chandra already said, it's extremely critical that we do digitalize the entire grid. Primarily from it would be useful to think from what's the end goal that we are trying to achieve here, which is, in my opinion, we want a grid that has more renewable penetration as compared to fossil fuel based generation. So there are certain trade-offs that we are making right now as a country and as human race, and we are moving from fossil fuels to renewables, which are on the lines of the inertia that earlier fossil fuel-based generation used to have, and many more like that. So whenever there are trade-offs and whenever we are challenging status quo, there are certain processes and systems that you need to put in place in order to actually make the system more sustainable and more reliable. So digitalization is going to provide us that platform that will provide the right insights into what kind of system should be built on top of it in order to make it more optimized, or the overall system more optimized. An example would be the migration from paper-based maps to Google Maps. So that kind of unlocked route optimizations. If you are to go from point A to point B, now we have visibility into what's the traffic that we are going to see on route A versus route B. So those kind of optimizations are true for the energy sector as well. So what should be the right penetration at a feeder level, at a distribution transformer level, at a grid level overall, is something that would be unlocked only once we have all the assets digitized in the energy sector.
Very well said, and I understand your insights and the points that you raised, you know, the points that you have underlined here. Arshi, tell us your view about it.
Hi, thank you for having me. So we are coming from a point that we've seen a huge amount of renewable energy have started to come in. Now, without digital tools, you do not understand what's really working. So the whole dynamic of an entire industry whom we count on has changed. Earlier, there used to be one party handling the supply, another party handling the demand. Now, where there is demand, there could also be supply. Without visibility, without verifiability, we cannot build the trust of actually accepting this energy transition we all are hoping for, you know? And once we are able to crack this, it would mean like better planning, fewer losses for the utilities, and for the end user, it would mean more options, more reliable energy, more affordable energy. So we are at this inflection point where tools like this would really help us take the next leap forward. Thank you.
Parag, what's your view about digitalization of the grid, and how is it actually ending up helping end consumers and individuals?
Thank you, Gaurav, for having me on this particular program podcast. We are very, very excited to be part of GIAP and Entice, and delighted for being chosen as one of the innovators to help DISCOMs in their endeavors. At Faclon, we have always believed that real energy transition won't just come from adding more renewables, but from making grids smarter, resilient, and globally connected. With Entice and GIAP, we are showing how digitization can help DISCOMs tackle sudden and unplanned load imbalances, whether it is from residential, commercial, or industrial demand, so that energy transition is not only clean, but also reliable and inclusive. For us, Entice was far more than a competition. It was actually a real-world test of how digital infrastructure and AI can solve solutions at scale for DISCOMs. We started initially with our focus on industrial grid and India's grid challenges, but the program made us think bigger, how we can adapt our platform and solution for rapidly urbanizing demands and demand centers. The big shift for us was the understanding that digitization is not just about saving energy or improving efficiency. It is about keeping grids flexible and responsive when climate volatility and sudden demand surges hit it. That realization now prepares us to move from pilot kind of deployments to a system scale rollouts with partners and GIAP in alliance countries. Thank you, Gaurav.
Thanks, Parag, for that perspective. Jarna, you know, tell us how you developed Enlog and what did you set out to solve? What is it something that you're trying to solve here? And what kind of challenges did you encounter along the way? Because there could have been many challenges that you may not have anticipated. And importantly, how did Entice help shape your idea into a concrete, marketable, scalable plan?
Yeah, sure. I would love to share what we are building at Enlog. I would like to start with, you know, what One of the questions that stuck with us, which helped us build what we are building, that was why, when it comes down to saving electricity, why it is still dependent on actions of people, why it is not autonomous yet, why, you know, we are still relying on those manual processes. So we had this question, we treated it as, you know, solving this problem in from the first principle point of view. And we decided that we want to make this energy efficiency completely automatic without the need to have repetitive manual work. So for that, at Enlog, we built the entire R&D, starting from the innovation on the hardware side and the AI models that we have built and trained with millions of data points. In this process, one of the key challenge we faced was to, you know, we developed the initial solution, but to scale it further, to implement it at a larger scale and take all those energy related decisions in the real time, it requires a data transmission at a really high level. And this is something which, you know, every IoT company which is set out to build something at a scale does face, that how do we have a reliable infrastructure which allows that kind of data transmission and this architecture. So we took a bold step there. We decided that rather than, you know, relying on few third-party companies which are providing the solution, we built those architecture or infrastructure for the communication at in-house. That's the, you know, initial call our team took. And this has helped us to scale really fast without having, you know, large cost. So this is one of the key factors which we have also seen in the implementation of smart meters, that a significant cost of smart meters, which, you know, even users end up paying, that is a part of this data transmission, which, you know, is distributed among all the users. So we started to work on this part. And while working with NDIS, I believe we are very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. Entice has built a kind of ecosystem which brings people from DISCOM and investors which are, you know, completely dedicated to help the startups like us. So it has provided us a bridge between, you know, the private buildings where our solutions were earlier implemented, and with the public utilities, and Entice is going to help us with the pilot, which is going to implement our solution at a really large scale. And eventually, you know, it is going to change the Indian grid through these kind of innovations. So we are really hopeful about it.
Absolutely, Janna. Ankur, how did Flock Energy come about? And if you can tell us a little bit about how did Entice help you refine the idea behind your startup?
Sure. Thank you so much, Gaurav. So just like any early stage startup, you generally build companies like us on the basis of a hunch and on the basis of some test research that you do. So we found two key things that we wanted to focus on. The first thing was data. We found that the data sharing between utility and the broader energy ecosystem was kind of lagging. The second thing was, in this entire energy transition equation, we found that the consumer as a participant was missing. So we wanted to bring consumer to the center of this energy transition dialogue. So with using these two things, we tried to build, or we started with the concept of trying to build a virtual power plant, which is essentially how do you integrate micro-level transactions to generate network-level optimizations. So with that concept, we started working with the utilities, and we started this almost 2.5 years back. So we found that the basic infrastructure that is required to support such kind of concepts and such kind of technologies was missing, which was smart meters. So then we decided, okay, how do we generate revenue? How do we get traction while we cannot build the virtual power plant technology? So we thought about onboarding assets such as batteries, solar, industrial assets, which can actually participate as and when the virtual power plant like technologies can be supported by the grid infrastructure. So to build that, we build a disaggregation model, which takes data from smart meters and the likes of it and disaggregates it to identify what's happening behind the meter. And then that's the digital twin part of it that we are building right now. So using that, as and when we have the required technology from and support from the grid, we would be able to orchestrate these assets to provide larger level, network level flexibility and reliability. Particularly from Entice standpoint, I think what there were two key things that we think Entice provided us. First is the reinforcement and reinforcement of our belief that this is a problem worth solving. And the second thing is, we always believe that a bottom-up approach is required to solve network-level challenges. So that's what Entice 2.0 provided us. So how do you leverage the consumer side of assets to provide network-level optimizations is what Entice is and the Duet program is trying to do. So Duet is trying to digitize all the assets, and then we come in where we try to optimize and digitize all everything that's happening behind the meter. And then, yeah, connections with the utilities and the grant funding resources that Entice has provided and GF will be providing has been extremely beneficial as well.
Thanks, Ankur. You know, Arshi, tell us a little bit about Trielectric and the solution that you have devised. Did participating in Entice encourage you to push the boundaries of possibility?
Oh, yes, it definitely did. To give you a little bit of my background, I've been putting solar rooftop for quite some time. Now, since we were putting these assets, we had these consumers. Once the plants were installed, we were never really able to like get more value out of that installation. And it took a lot of effort to acquire that customer. So Trielectric has come out of that frustration. So the projects were getting built, devices were getting installed, but no one really knew if they were working as promised. So that's when we decided that we'll be building a layer that brings trust into this system, where utilities, stakeholders, financing companies, everybody can trust these assets to actually provide value in the longer run. With Entice, it is really like pushed to test this in real conditions with the utilities. You talk to Entice team, they're like absolutely fantastic. So we as startups are always passionate about what we do, but these guys are as passionate about the topic as we are. So it's wonderful interacting with them, how they interact with the utilities. They also chose one of the best utilities. We had the superintending engineer who came from that utility, Ms. Deepthi Mathur. Hear her speak. I mean, she ignites the room. So we couldn't be in a better environment to actually be able to act on things that we've already been thinking about planning in our startups. So this is like a perfect platform for us to really put ourselves out there. Thank you.
Parag, for you, what were the major takeaways from the Entice program? How do you think these will help Faklong Labs chart its next stage of growth?
Thank you, Gaurav. Building tech is one thing. Scaling it is another. The real hurdle is high upfront cost, slow adoption cycles, and integrating legacy systems that resist change. But if we look deeper, the real challenge is trust. Trust from DISCOMs, trust from people who want to deploy such solutions. Utilities, regulators, and end users need confidence that these solutions are robust, secure, and deliver long-term value. This is exactly where platforms like Entice play a catalytic role. They don't just give startups visibility, they also back us with credibility through programs like such. Entice validated our work, showing that what we are building is not just promising, but ready for scale and can be taken not only to DISCOMs in India, but in alliance countries as well. So if there is one message I would leave behind is startups can innovate quickly, but platforms like Entice ensure that innovations don't stay locked in the labs. It gets deployed into grid and reaches communities and it impact nations.
Absolutely. Final word to you, Priya. You know, tell us something from your point of view, because you sit on the other side of the fence. What are the key impediments that, in your view, that startups face to scale? Because scalability remains one of the almost like a challenge that many startups fail to surmount and then fall by the wayside. Capital, of course, deep capital for long periods of time, of course, is one of the challenges. But what are the other impediments for startups to scale in India, Priya, in your point of view?
Yes, thank you so much, Bharat. And you know, I would like to sort of give a more holistic response, given that we look at multiple sectors, you know, under the umbrella of climate tech. So this is sort of a little bit broader. But zooming out, I would say, you know, some of the key impediments include, of course, you mentioned the capital. So having access to a pool of capital, and particularly trying to essentially partner with the right investors at the get-go. So, you know, from the early stage itself, having the right mix of capital, whether it's equity and debt and grant capital, philanthropy, et cetera. And knowing what use of funds you're actually going to be sort of carving out for the company's operations is very important. So not to use basically, you know, equity funds for CapEx or grant funds for hiring, those kinds of, you know, segmentation is important. That's one. And having the right access to this. And obviously, it's easier said than done. There's so many sort of, one would say figuratively, you know, able to sort of pools of capital that you're able to access, but then which ones actually convert and lead to long-term partnerships is another story altogether. So it requires a lot of perseverance and resilience from startup founders, which is why we're always so impressed when we meet the founders of the companies. And you know, the sort of folks behind the wheel have taken that you know, brave decision to actually start an early stage venture, because it is tough in all respects. But the other piece, you know, additional to capital is really kind of around the product and the technology. So having the right sort of product market fit, being able to demonstrate stickiness when it comes to your value proposition, being able to refine that value proposition, be agile and nimble to actually, you know, sort of suit the needs of your customer as those needs evolve, and also the needs of the market when it comes to essentially what is the broader policy framework saying, how does competition lie in this segment, how international companies looking at it, could we benchmark and see what the sort of companies in the US are doing, given that it's obviously a different regulatory market, but any lessons learned from there. So being quick and flexible to essentially adjust your product value proposition to fit what your customer needs, but also kind of having a very clear thesis and a roadmap when you're actually developing that, and being very fundamentally disciplined towards that is super important. And then the last piece I would really say is it's all about people at the end of the day. So, you know, making sure that you have as a startup founder, the right people to manage, you know, various different functions within your company. Scaling is obviously going from, let's say, a 2 or 3 person founding team to basically a large company of, you know, 100, 200 employees. How do you essentially manage that people transfer? How do you sort of hire for the right skill sets and make sure that the cultural fit is also very intact, and that, you know, everyone who you're hiring, both on the both in the team front also and as advisors and as board members, etc., have your interests at heart as a company, the mission stays true. So that is something that is important when you're thinking about scaling as well, and that's one of the challenges that we face, and we help the companies navigate as they grow.
Very well said, Priya. Thank you so much to all our guests, Priya Shah, Jharna Saha, Parag Patil, Arshit Chadda, and Ankur Sharma, for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us and sharing your deep insights and perspective. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gaurav. Thank you. Pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.